Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Morals and Ethics. My name is Magla Pillay and I'm here in the studio today with Sister Denise from the Brahmakumaris, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with them for over 40 years. Today we're going to look at the subject of how conventional morality has failed us. Sister Denise is particularly interested in the subject of conventional morality because she is of the opinion that we need to re-look at our own inner value system, and by that I mean your own ethics, your own standards, and especially your own conscience. Most people find that they have the intention in any given situation to do the right thing, but they often act against their own conscience. If you look at the background, you'll notice it's a Grecian temple. And so the format of today's show is what we call Socratic dialogue, which simply means the ability to get to the truth by putting questions to another. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us today, and a very, very warm welcome to today's show. The topic is particularly interesting because it, if a listener is actually interested, he or she will have to take a really close look at themselves and ask themselves some very important questions.
Yes.
Can I ask you for a definition? What do you mean when you say conventional morality?
Conventional morality to me is the morality that everyone's used to, and it's based upon what I call the materialist paradigm. That means to say it's based upon the idea that a human being is a male or a female body. Now, in conventional morality, it is said that the people who are in male bodies are fundamentally more valuable than the people in female bodies, which means that the conventional morality is biased towards the males and against the females. Sometimes a girl will say, well, why am I not given the same rights as my brother? And she'll be told, well, because you're a girl. And that's all. Well, she may be capable of handling those rights. She's a human being. She has human rights. But there is this problem of gender bias in conventional morality because it's based on the material idea of a person being an object, male or female object. The other problem I have with conventional morality is that it inclines people towards double standards because it's based upon the opinion of people in power in any given situation, which means that what they decide is right and wrong also is what's convenient for that particular group. And if it's not convenient for another group, then that doesn't matter. So it's biased towards the ruling class against minorities and those who are not having political power or economic power, or who have less education, or they're underprivileged in some other way. So that if a person who's in a position of social power goes against the moral rules, then they will say, well, in my case, these rules don't apply to me, or I should get off lightly because I'm important. And so the whole idea of moral reasoning gets skewed because the principles are created by people. And the people will arrange the morals to suit their convenience, and they will change them according to the circumstances, which means that the ethical principles and moral ideals vary according to the needs of those who decide what they are.
Okay. So a person finds themselves in a situation where you're born into a culture that says you behave like this and this and this. And they grow up thinking, because they're doing everything right, that there won't be any negative consequences. But what are you saying then in that scenario?
Well, what I'm saying is that the conventional morality is not in alignment with the realities of the laws of karma. And is consequently...
Is that the highest standard by which we should be measuring our conduct?
Well, the laws of karma are not standards. They're just the way things work, rather like the laws of physics. You can't change them. Morality and ethics are not the way things are. They're the way people want them to be, because it's convenient. And so they give an education to people so that they will believe those things, even if they can be shown not to be true. And because of this, there's a discrepancy. And so the problem is that conventional morality actually supports corruption, supports double standards, and supports bias according to prejudice. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it is not a very powerful. It will collapse anyway, whether we like it or not. Whereas the laws of karma are based on... Well, they're not based on anything, but they reflect the laws of spirituality. And the laws of spirituality say simply that a person, whether in a male or a female body, is anyway genderless. The actual soul is genderless, so that you can't say with any kind of foundation that if you're in a male body, that somehow makes you somehow better than if you're in a female body. And the laws of spirituality would even go so far as to say that a soul who reincarnates will always reincarnate as a human being. Now, in conventional morality, in societies which do subscribe to the idea of reincarnation, they will say that, well, you'll reincarnate as a worm if you do this, or something like this, as a threat, you see. But that's not based on a reality. The reality is a human soul must reincarnate as a in a human body, because the soul is like a seed. So if you sow a cabbage seed, it'll grow into a cabbage. It won't grow into a mango. You know, the seed will produce the fruit that's according to what it is. And so conventional morality includes beliefs that are untrue, but they are there, and they are given a lot of importance by people who use them to pursue their personal ends. And so that means that people are being quite badly misinformed, and they don't have any recourse because they don't know enough to challenge it. But I think once we start to be aware of the laws of spirituality, we get information which says, well, you can challenge these things. And why would we challenge these things? Is because they have actually failed us. Once we know that we've been betrayed by something, failed by something, and then we say, well, excuse me, let's leave that and let's see what's real. Let's see what's actually the real laws.
And how does one get to that point? Because they're not... Sister Denise, you know what problem I have with what you just said? Is that none of this is visible. Nothing is written. There's so little evidence of what you said in the world. So even if you have a gut feeling that this is wrong, what do you do about it? Because it's what the world has become. And you're just one little person in one corner of the globe thinking, this is not right. However, you know, gee, the other 15 million people in my country have no problem with this at all. So,
well, you're absolutely right. And I think the proof has to come out in the pudding, you know. If my views are correct and I live by them, there will be the results that I expect. They will happen, you see. And if my views are not correct, then I will not get the results that I'm planning on getting. So the proof comes in the pudding. But I think what we are seeing in the world today is that people are beginning to be aware, particularly in terms of, the behavior, the violence against women, for example. You see, the problem is that the conventional morality says that, well, women are inherently less valuable, so it doesn't matter. But then people are having a reaction saying, well, why doesn't it matter? The women themselves are saying, well, I don't buy this, you see. So there's a shift in social attitudes that are happening anyway, and that the system that may have worked adequately for a few centuries, somehow at this time it's reached a point where the flaws in it are showing up. And I think it's because the flaws are showing up that there's a substantial number of people who are saying, I challenge this. With this many flaws, there has to be something wrong, you see. And then another way of looking at it starts to come through, and then it's a matter of building support for that other idea. And if you can show that it works better, then you will get support. Of course, it takes time. It may take a few generations, but you have to start somewhere.
Okay, so what do we replace it with? What is the other options? I think one of the reasons why people are the way they are is because they are not aware that there's another way to be. Okay, and now you are saying that there is.
I think the important thing is to say the foundation of conventional morality is the materialist paradigm. And the materialist paradigm, in various ways, is being challenged from other angles. We're just looking at the angle of ethics and morality, but it's being challenged from the angle of science also, which is nothing to do with ethics and morality. Now, the spiritualist paradigm says that a human being is not a human body. That is absolutely new, you see. And the implications of that in terms of ethics and morality are quite substantial. Once we start articulating it and saying this implication, this implication, this implication, and comparing and contrasting the moral and ethical implications of the two paradigms, then you have something that you have to choose. And people will want to stay with the old way because they have faith in tradition and so on. But once you start to analyze it logically and systematically, you find that the traditional system actually doesn't stand up to scrutiny. And so people who give importance to that kind of analysis will go with a system that does stand up to scrutiny. And this is where you gradually get your shift. It takes time because not everybody is willing to accept something which is logical, coherent, and consistent if it's in opposition to what they're used to.
And Sister Denise, even though people are subscribing to a way of thinking and being that is not dysfunctional per se, they get something out of it, don't they? They get something out of it, even if it's what you call temporary. They get something out of it. How does one bring oneself to the understanding that even though you're getting something out of it, the fact that you're succeeding means that you're losing long term? That is your message, isn't it?
I think what I'm saying is that these traditions have been able to hold together for many centuries, but at the present time they're not holding up. and so that they have a much more difficult time trying to substantiate themselves and to validate themselves because it's collapsing. You see, so that system can no longer so easily be shown to be valid. And so it's a circumstance in which an alternative system, which does show itself to have validity, is a serious challenger. You see, if the existing system was working, then it would be very difficult to challenge it. It's because it's collapsing that a challenge is coming through.
Okay, so to use the example that you used about a woman who finds herself treated as a second-class citizen based on the fact that she was a woman, within herself, how does she shift to, what should she do internally to, in the first place, she's come to a point, this point in her life, where she's been taught from the day she was born, you're worth very little or nothing. Okay? How does she then empower herself? How does one bring oneself up by having been flattened by the system?
The process of women's emancipation has been going on for nearly 200 years. And at the present time, technology, internet, so many things are there that it's very difficult to keep the women ignorant as they used to be able to, you see. And this is one of the reasons why there is this huge movement which says that women may not be educated, because if they're educated, they'll know too much and then we won't be able to control them anymore. You see, so that means there's a complete shift in the way that men and women relate to each other. You see, what's happening now in more and more countries is the way a family arises is not how it used to be, you know, and people are thinking very differently. I think also that there are ideas in the air that weren't there before. And so even if a woman is segregated from all this, somehow or the other she'll find out. And once you start to smell something, feel something, it's no longer possible to say, no, that's not there. There's too much evidence, you see. Children are much more growing up quicker, they're smarter, they understand things, technology is very well able to be used by children. Of course, the reincarnationist will say, well, they learned in their previous birth, so they get born knowing how to work these things. You see, computers became readily available, the home computer, since the 1980s, so anyone born after that, you can say, has a facility with them. But the older generation, born much earlier than that, just has a problem with, you see. And we see this. And the other thing is, there's so much movement going around in the world. People are moving here, there, and everywhere. They never used to. And when you move around, you go from country to country, so it's very difficult for people to buy into the idea of nationalism. Even that is being questioned, you see. And there's so many ideas out there saying, you know, you are not your nationality. All of the work that has been done to challenge the idea of the superiority of the white skin and the inferiority of the black skin, this is having seriously been challenged, you see. And so it's anybody who tries to assert that, there's going to be thousands of people who will take that person down and say, what are you talking about? Are you uneducated or something, you see? So there is a shift of ideas. And so we're in a period of time where there is a demand to rethink the foundation on which we build our values, because now people are thinking of humanity as a whole. Perhaps even the climate change issue has helped people to understand that, because it's not that climate is changing in one country and not in all the other countries, or it's not that if you do some damaging thing that affects climate in one country, it's not going to affect the climate in another country. So these political borders are having less and less meaning, and so that we're in a circumstance politically, biologically, geographically, and so on, where whatever was the case is no longer the case, which means that any new idea which is powerful is going to quite potentially take over from and displace previous ideas which are now no longer valid, no longer current.
Where does God feature in all of what you just said?
I feel that the energy of God, the intelligence of God, is extremely active at this time, because the world is in a transitioning state, and that energy, those ideas, those forces, you get very strong force of negativity going on, very strong force of positivity going on, and people are wondering, you know, what is happening. So I personally feel that God is very active, bringing in his, her intelligence, and also just influencing a change. We might even go as far as to say a change in civilization.
Mm-hmm. And how is he doing that? The square mammoth task that you just described.
Well, it's a matter of thought, isn't it? You know, people do not realize how powerful thought is. God, if you say God is an intelligence, who knows what's what? And the intelligence of God starts thinking, conveying, seeing all of his children, the human souls, as souls, and they start picking it up, then it's a change in the mind space, you see. A lot of people don't think there is anything like the mind space. But as we were talking earlier, if you think thoughts of hatred for someone, they will feel it. That means those thoughts are going around in the, in some sort of space, which I choose to call the mind space. Our minds are instruments of perception. We can pick up things. There's a phenomenon that two inventors or three inventors can independently invent the same thing with no contact with each other. People say it's an idea whose time has come, so it gets picked up. There are indicators of this, you see. So I think that the factor of God is acting extremely powerfully at this time, and then those who deny God or who are against God or whatever, they will just simply have to deal with it as and when it comes in their face.
Okay. Sister Denise, unfortunately we have to bid you farewell for now. I hope that you have gained some insight from this talk and learnt a little bit more about yourself. And what Sister Denise has invited you to do is to look at your own conscience, look at your behavior, look at the way you've been thinking and functioning, and ask yourself the all-important question, does what used to be right for me, is it still right for me today? It's not a question of an external influence. It's a question of your own understanding, and also understanding of the law of karma. Sister Denise, thank you very much for being with us today, and we hope to see you soon. Thank you and goodbye.